Chapter 6. Exosomes. After reading the last two chapters, you may be shaking your head in disbelief. You may have so many questions swirling in your mind that you feel disoriented. The main question for us all is how the entire world of medicine, virology, and immunology, along with our political leaders, could have made such an obvious mistake. How could generations of doctors and researchers have become convinced that many of our common diseases are viral in origin? Let's first provide the scientific basis for challenging the notion of contagion. As we have said, an in-depth look at the scientific literature reveals no proof of the contagion theory, but the alternate explanations for so-called bacterial or viral illness do have research behind them. Only Western medicine invokes the concept of contagion, person-to-person transmission of harmful bacteria or viruses. Neither traditional Chinese medicine nor Ayurveda, a system of medicine with historical roots in the Indian subcontinent, entertains the concept of contagion. These ancient healing systems look at imbalances, diet and toxins as the causes of disease. So how did the theory of viral causation come about? During the late 1800s, with the popularity of Pasteur and the increasing materialistic thinking of the age, the germ theory gained popularity. The germ theory explained common observations, such as why drinking sewage water made people sick and why people who share a workspace or household seem to get sick in a similar way at the same time. With the advent and widespread use of the light microscope, scientists and doctors could clearly identify bacteria associated with particular illnesses. In the 19th century, scientists and physicians assumed that the teeming forms they saw in their microscopes caused disease and were hostile to life. In Writing on the Origin of Species, published in 1859, Charles Darwin, a contemporary of Pasteur, proposed a theory of evolution in which only the plants and animals best adapted to their environment survived to reproduce. He painted a picture of life in which the various organisms were in constant struggle against each other. Darwin borrowed popular concepts, such as survival of the fittest, from sociologist Herbert Spencer and struggle for existence, from economist Thomas Malthus. The notion of hostility and competition in all of nature fit with attempts to justify the social inequalities, poverty, and sufferings that characterized the dawning industrial age. Social Darwinism actually preceded biological Darwinism. For all the known, infectious, bacterial illnesses, the science points to other accurate explanations, namely starvation and poisoning. However, the microscope gave scientists the ability to find germs at the site of disease. Their observations revolutionized the practice of medicine and our thinking. The microscope allowed medicine to enter a scientific age and provide a ready and easy explanation for illness, one that circumvented the more difficult and less profitable work of cleaning up the cities, improving diets, mitigating poverty, and reducing pollution. However, bacteria are found at the site of disease for the same reason that firemen are found at the site of fires. Bacteria are the cleanup crew tasked with digesting and getting rid of dead and diseased tissues. Claiming that bacteria cause a certain disease is no more reasonable than claiming that firemen cause fires, especially as experimental evidence shows this to be false. Likewise, maggots on a dead dog are there to clean up dead tissue. No one would accuse the maggots of killing the dog. In fact, one therapy for necrotic tissue is maggot therapy, applying maggots to the wound. The maggots kill only the dead tissue. When there is only live tissue left to eat, they die off. But scientists could not always find an offending bacterium for a specific disease. Louis Pasteur could not find a bacterial agent for rabies, and he speculated about a pathogen too small to be detected using a microscope. The same held true for polio. Hard as they tried, scientists could find no bacteria at the site of the illness. Following Pasteur, and completely wedded to germ theory, they postulated a tiny enemy, something that our technology could not yet visualize. The search was on to find this disease-causing organism. The eureka moment came with the invention of the electron microscope. Scientists finally saw tiny particles at the site of disease. These particles had stuff inside them, suggesting they were alive. They were more abundant in diseased tissue than in healthy tissue, although this is not what Lonca found in algae. There were variations between types of particles, suggesting that one type of particle caused one disease and another particle type caused a different disease. Immediately assuming that these particles were bad for us, scientists named them viruses, after the Latin word for toxin. Further research revealed that these particles often emerged from within the cell. This led to the conclusion that these viruses were not just bad for the cell in which they resided, but they could invade other cells. Scientists surmised that viruses co-opted the machinery of the cell like parasites, turning the cells into slaves, meaning the cell would do the bidding of its new master, the infecting particle. Like alien invaders in science fiction movies, the particle would come from the outside, inject itself into the cell, take over the genetic machinery of the cell, reproduce itself by the thousands, and then emerge from the cell to continue on its evolutionary path, spreading to take over the world. The Wiley virus theory was born, except that what scientists had really discovered with their electron microscopes was not viruses but exosomes. The only thing infectious in this scenario was the noxious belief that these small particles, dubbed viruses, cause disease. This false theory was the part that spread all over the world and is now threatening to kill us all. Exosomes are simple, well-characterized features in the cells of all creatures, and conventional scientists have carefully elucidated their functions. When a living organism is threatened in almost any way, through starvation, chemical poisoning, or electromagnetic effects, the cells and tissues have a mechanism for packaging, propagating, and releasing these poisons. Modern researchers have shown that exosomes have exactly the same attributes as viruses. They are the same size, contain the same components, and act on the same receptors. HIV researcher James Hildreth, president and CEO of Macquarie Medical College and former professor at Johns Hopkins, put it this way: "The virus is fully an exosome in every sense of the word. Exosomes are completely indistinguishable from what the virologists have been calling viruses." Here's how exosomes work. Let's say you have a poorly nourished organism, then you expose it to a common environmental toxin. The tissues and cells that are affected begin to produce, package, and secrete these poisons in the form of exosomes. This is a way of ridding the cells and tissues of substances that would do it great harm. The greater the exposure to toxic assaults, the more exosomes will be produced. Studies have shown that if one somehow stops the cells from producing and excreting these exosomes, then the cells and tissues, in fact the organism, will have a worse outcome. This research demonstrates that the production and excretion of exosomes is a crucial detoxification function of all cells and tissues. Another clearly demonstrated function of these exosomes is that they act as a kind of key that circulates in the blood and lymph of organisms, such as mammals and humans, until they find a distant cell with a lock into which this key fits. The exosome acts as a messenger, essentially warning the other cells and tissues that danger is afoot and that they need to prepare. Far from acting as hostile invading viruses, exosomes provide a brilliant system of communication within an organism to rid the cells and tissues of poisons and then communicate to the rest of the organism what has happened. Far from acting as a source of illness, these particles are an integral part of our detoxification system. They are the true firemen, obviously present in higher amounts in cases of disease, in which a higher burden of poisoning has occurred. In fact, these viruses are not invaders but toxin-gobbling messengers that our cells produce to help us adjust to environmental assaults, including electrosmog. After all, most people have adjusted to worldwide radio waves, electricity in our homes, and ubiquitous Wi-Fi, and the sparrow population rebounded after the Great Plague of 1738. It is exosomes that allow this to happen. These tiny messengers provide real-time and rapid genetic adaptation to environmental changes. Whether these exosomes can help us adapt to the extreme disruption of 5G is the question of the day. If you do an internet search, you will find that exosomes are the latest thing in medicine, used as a treatment for cancer, anti-aging products, facial rejuvenation, hair regrowth, and even exosome penis treatment. Finally, the research shows that toxic exposure, including exposure to fear and stress, increases exosome production. This should come as no surprise to any honest observer of sickness and health, since many have noted that stressed, worried, fearful people get sick easier, so it makes sense that you would find increased detoxification products in their tissues. There is now clear experimental evidence that exosomes made by one organism can be picked up by other organisms of the same or different species and cause protective reactions in these new organisms. One study showed that if mice are exposed to the liver toxin known as acetaminophen Tylenol, the liver cells increase their production of protective exosomes. The researchers isolated and purified these exosomes and exposed other mice to them. The second group of mice did not get sick, as would be predicted by the virus theory. Instead, they developed protective responses in their livers and secreted more exosomes. This is similar to what trees do when confronted with a beetle infestation. The originally affected tree produces chemicals that help the tree survive the beetle exposure. These same chemicals are secreted, with the help of the fungus or mycelium in the soil, through the root system of the tree. These chemicals then serve as messengers to the surrounding trees, telling them that beetles have taken hold and that protective measures may be needed. If the beetles go away, then these measures are not taken. If the beetles show up, the surrounding trees also produce a protective response. The real point here is that thanks to exosomes, nature is not raw in tooth and claw but a superb cooperative venture. The originally affected tree is not competing for survival with the other trees. The affected tree needs the other trees in order to survive and thrive. We need each other, members of our own species and other species, otherwise none of us will survive. The germ theory is wrong, the virus theory is wrong. Viruses are not here to kill us. In reality, they are exosomes whose role is to provide the detoxification package and the communication system that allows us to live a full and healthy existence. A war on viruses is a war on life. It's clear that the misidentification of exosomes as viruses was a tragic mistake, one that it's about time we correct, once and for all. What we know about exosomes can help us solve the mystery of childhood diseases like chicken pox and measles, and also of STDs, which seem to require an explanation of contagious. This will be the subject of the next chapter.